All right. So last week we talked about pluralism. Is there more than one way to be a good Jew? Right? And the answer, as most answers in life, is it goes both ways. You weren't on the phone last Sunday night, were you, Phil?
No, I was not.
All right. So the basic thing we said, that there are many differences among the, there's a range of who, what makes Judaism. And we talked about the fact that Reform movement talks about, in history, we had the Ashkenazim and Sephardim, we had Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, we had Hasidim and Misnagdim, that throughout history, there were differences that arose among the Jewish people. But in hindsight, even the Orthodox world says the differences are allowable. In other words, you can have differences of opinion as to what is Jewish thought, and they can be equally legitimate. The problem is, the same history, the last 3,000 years of Jewish life, that pointed out that there's a range which is acceptable, also points out that there are differences that are unacceptable, which not only Orthodox say is outside the pale, but even Reform say. So that, for example, 2,000 years ago, there were a group of Jews who decided that their leader was the Messiah. His name was Jesus. And that after he died, they said he's the Messiah, even though he died. And as a result, we don't have to keep the commandments anymore, etc. And both Orthodox and Reform Judaism said that's a breakaway. It's no law. It's not acceptable. You had the problem of the Karaites and the Sadducees. So what you really have in history is different. There's a range of possibility, but there are certain basics that cannot be broken. Once we understand that, we would say it's very clear that the Orthodox understanding of what are the boundaries are the only ones that work historically. That is to say, we'll find that we're going to take the Orthodox concept that there are four basic principles that identify Judaism. Number one, the belief in one God. Number two, the belief that God gave the Torah to the Jewish people. Number three, that the commandments of the Torah are eternally binding on the Jewish people. And then number four, that the oral law is God-given and binding as well. And what we find is that up until the year 1800, up until the Reform and Conservative movements, any group that accepted those four basics, the other differences became acceptable alternatives. And any group that rejected any one of those four became a breakaway. Now, that would identify...
When you say breakaway, just not Jewish anymore.
No. In other words, the people are Jewish, and that's what we're going to get into today.
Okay.
That the people are Jewish, but the identification of that belief system is not the Jewish belief system. Let me give you an example. He said, Christianity believes in two basic principles of Judaism and rejects two. Christians believe that there is one God and that he gave the Torah to the Jewish people. What makes them not a legitimate Jewish alternative is because they break away with movement three, with principle three and four. That while they believe in one God, and that God gave the Torah to the Jews, they don't accept, and as why don't Christians put on tefillin or keep Shabbat? Because while they believe God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, Jesus came and could make the changes, and therefore they don't have to keep it anymore. And therefore they don't believe the Torah is eternally binding, and they don't believe in the oral laws God-given. And therefore, Christianity, having... accepting two principles of Judaism and rejecting two, is another religion. And therefore, what we're saying is the conservative and reform movements reject more of those than Christianity did. And as the conservative and reform movements rejected, accept the belief in God and rejected the belief that God gave the Torah to the Jewish people. And so, and therefore, pluralism no longer applies unless you're going to say that anything you want to believe is Judaism is Jewish, in which case the reform movement and conservative themselves have to be asked, well, why don't you accept the present day Jews for Jesus? Is that accepted to them as a legitimate alternative? No, because you know that there are certain points beyond which you can't go and say, well, that's Judaism also. Now, last time we ended with the point of saying that what we were trying to figure out is what is the essential statement of Jewish belief? And that no matter what a Jew believes, what he believes is does not change that person being Jewish. And therefore, we would say, since we understand also that Judaism is an ummah, Judaism is not merely a statement of religion, but a statement of a nationhood, a nationality, anybody who accepts, anybody who changes the beliefs is still Jewish, but that their group is not a statement of Jewish belief. So a person comes and says, well, Rabbi, what's the difference? Let's say, I'm a Reformed Jew. My mom is Jewish and you believe I'm Jewish. So what? Isn't it clear that there's no practical difference? You're going to say that my belief is not a legitimate Jewish alternative, but I'm still Jewish. Is there any way where once we change the definition of what is Judaism, it may also affect the application of who is Jewish, who is a Jew? And I'm afraid that the answer to that is yes. Now, I'll give you an example. 2,000 years ago, what's the year, 2022? Almost 2,000 years ago, there were a group of Jews who believed that their leader was the Messiah, and early Christians. But they were totally Jewish. They kept Shabbos and they kept kosher. They were really Orthodox. They just believed that their dead leader was Mashiach. And in the Jewish world, we also said, you guys are wrong, but you are Jewish. In other words, the fact that those Jews call themselves Jews and Christians, they accept their leader was Jesus. We also said that they're Jewish. So now we have to ask the question, if 2,000 years ago, the followers of Jesus were considered Jewish, what happened? How did it change? How is it that now both Orthodox and Reformed Jews would say that the billion Christians in the world, the billion and a half Christians, are not Jewish? Something happened that we're going to have to trace. If 2,000 years ago, there was a handful of people who believed, Jews, who believed that their leader was the Messiah, and we all said they were Jewish, what changed? What created a situation where you got a billion and a half Christians and both Orthodox and Reformed say you're not Jewish? And what happened is we can actually trace it historically and then look at what's going on in the Jewish world to understand that we're in the midst of that process now. So let's picture. And by the way, early Christianity is pretty well documented through the documents that we now call the New Testament and the writings about the early Christians after the death of Jesus. So what happened is this. Let's say about 10 or 20 years after the death of Jesus, there was a man by the name of Paul, Saint Paul, Saul of Tarsus, a Jew, who, as a Jew, joined the Christian world. He said, on the road to Damascus, he had a vision, and he converted to Christianity on the way to Damascus. It's a bit of an overreach, because since Christianity then was not another religion, it was a branch within Judaism, it's not so much converted to Christianity as much as a Jew, he accepted the belief in Jesus. But still, all other Jews would say, "Oh, you are Jewish. I think you're making a mistake about this guy being the Messiah. We got it so far."
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what changed? What changed is that Paul, St. Paul, Saul of Tarsus, became one of the leaders of early Christianity. And he said, I believe that Jesus did not come just for the Jewish people to have a Messiah. I believe he came for the whole world. And that what we have to do, and by the way, the New Testament was written around this time. So the New Testament has a book called The Acts of the Apostles. After having four stories about Jesus called Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the fifth book is called The Acts of the Apostles, in which it followed the 20 or 30 years after the death of Jesus as to how early Christianity developed. Paul converted on the road to Damascus. He joined the Christian world, but he disagreed with the other Jewish members of Christianity. They all said, look, we're Jewish. We're Orthodox. They didn't call it Orthodox, but we keep Shabbos and kosher. We keep those commandments. It's 9 o'clock, I'm over. Okay. Where were we?
We keep those commandments and we're Jewish. And Paul.
Right. Yeah. So all the Jews said to Paul, it's so interesting, by the way, the Jews who followed Jesus remained Orthodox. And the Saint Paul who said Jesus came to do away with the commandments, admittedly, according to the New Testament, never knew Jesus. And interesting, the ones who knew Jesus, you'd think they would know better what he wanted of them. The ones who knew Jesus said, how can we drop command? We're Jewish, we keep the mitzvot. While the Paul who came and created a Christianity that said, that Jesus said, do away with the commandments, admittedly never met Jesus. But, so there's the book, the fifth book of the New Testament is called The Acts of the Apostles. It tells you about the 20 or 30 years after the death of Jesus and how that world developed. In Acts, in that book, chapter 15, they have a great climax. Paul and some other people come to Jerusalem. The Jerusalem Council ran early Christianity. After the death of Jesus, nobody really had the charisma of Jesus, but what they had, there was a guy, James, the brother of Jesus, and other people. The Jerusalem Council ran Christianity. And they called a conference in which Paul was saying how successful he was getting Gentiles to come to believe in the God of the Jews and that Jesus was Messiah. And the Jerusalem Council came up with a compromise. And the compromise is as follows. On the one end, we're Jews. Of course, we're Orthodox and we keep the commandment. But you know, we Orthodox Jews believe that a goy, a Gentile, who comes to believe in the truth of Judaism does not have to convert to Judaism. He can accept that God gave the Torah and keep the commandments binding on Gentiles. And therefore, the Jerusalem Council said as follows. Whoever is Jewish in Christianity will keep the commandment. But anybody that Paul brings in from the Gentile world, they don't have to keep the commandment because the commandments are just for the Jews. They shouldn't do idol worship and they shouldn't bring a sacrifice to idols, you know, certain basic commandments. But they agreed to make a compromise. And in fact, at that point, what developed was a two-tiered system of Christianity, which in history is called the Jewish church and the Gentile church. Don't get too hyper about the word church. The word church doesn't really mean a building. It means like a kehillah, a community. So you had the Jewish church, the Jewish community, and the Gentile one. The Jewish church in Christianity, they believed in Jesus, but of course they were totally Torah observant Jews. They wore tefillin. They kept Shabbos. The Gentile church, anybody who Paul brings in from the Gentile world, he has a dispensation. He does not have to keep the commandments because he's a Gentile. He wasn't expected in the first place. And for a while, some say it was 150 years, 150, 200. For a while, you had two communities in Christianity, the Jewish church and the Gentile church, the Jewish one being Orthodox Jew, and the Gentiles not having to keep kosher laws or Shabbos laws. Now, what do you think happened in history? What happened in history is that anytime a group of Jews make a mistake and change Judaism, no matter how powerful they are, no matter how not powerful, they will disappear in history over a couple hundred years. And therefore, the Jewish church disappeared over time. It dwindled down to nothing. And the Gentile church, which started up as a small number of people who Paul pulled in as Gentiles, the Gentile church was much more successful. It was not succeeding among Jews. Paul and his other missionaries were bringing Gentiles into Christianity. Remember, in those days, Christianity then was very easy. In return for believing in Jesus, you must accept the God of the Jews and the Torah of the Jews. Just like now, the Christian church accepts the entire Old Testament, which is the Jewish Bible, as God-given. It just, they don't have to do it anymore. And so what happened in history is the Jewish church disappeared, and all that's left is the Gentile church, who developed, instead of saying, we don't have to keep the commandments, they developed the belief that Jesus came to do away with the commandments. It's clear that's not true, because the New Testament itself tells us that the Jewish followers of Jesus, who knew Jesus a lot better than the Gentiles who came later, kept the commandments. That now is that something that may be developing within Judaism. A person comes to me and says, I am a Reformed Jew. So it used to be, I'd say, look, your father's Jewish. Doesn't even have to be your father. Your mom's Jewish. So you're Jewish. I think you're wrong about what God wants about the commandments, but you're Jewish. However, can you think about in the differences that we have in Jewish law between Orthodox and Reform, where would our differences determine who's a Jew? Anything come to mind, Daniel?
If your father is Jewish, are you considered Jewish?
Very good. Two different areas of who is a Jew. Number one, according to Jewish law, in the Orthodox view, if your mother's Jewish, you're Jewish, but if your father's Jewish, you're not. The Reform movement accepted 30 or 40 years ago that for our purposes, we're going to consider anybody, whether your mother's Jewish or father's Jewish, or either parent is Jewish, and you declare yourself that you're Jewish, we'll consider you Jewish. Meaning, that's the first of the two areas where the Reform movement says we'll consider somebody Jewish, which according to Orthodox is non-Jew. The second area is what makes a conversion. According to Jewish law, to convert to Judaism, you have to accept that the Torah is God-given and binding, that the Torah is completely binding on the Gentile. Before the person converts, accept God gave the Torah and that all the commandments are binding. Because the Reform movement does not believe the Torah as God-given, and they certainly don't believe that it's binding because so much of the Torah is not binding according to Reform on anybody. When a person converts to Judaism in Reform, they're doing it without accepting the belief that God gave the Torah and that the Torah is entirely binding. And therefore, in history, while the early Reform Jews were totally Jewish, but over time, more and more members of the movement that call themselves Reformed Jews are not Jewish at all in the Orthodox view. Not because anybody's lying, but because they consider a person Jewish if their father is Jewish and not mom, their mother. And if they convert the Reform method, without requiring to believe that God gave the Torah or that the commandments are binding, they consider Jewish. And therefore, we have the same problem early Christianity had, where the Reform movement started as being totally Jewish in the Orthodox view, But because of the differences they made in the law of what makes you Jewish by birth and what makes you Jewish by conversion, increasing numbers of members of the Reform movement are not Jewish. And it's a very large number now. In fact, there are very well-known major rabbis in the movement who are, according in the Orthodox view, halachically not Jewish. And therefore, just as in the case of early Christianity, once you start the question of what is Judaism, it actually comes to affect the question of who is a Jew. And that is to say that long before the movement may even disappear, the Orthodox world at the present time, it's well known in all Orthodox communities that anybody who comes to say, I am a Reformed Jew, the person means well, but we don't know if they're Jewish. He's not lying to us. He's part of a movement that says you have a right to say you're Jewish, but it's just that they made a unilateral redefinition, saying I could be Jewish if my dad's Jewish, even if my mom's not, or I can be Jewish through a Reform conversion. And now increasing numbers of Reform and conservative Jews are not halachically Jewish. And just as it developed that way over a few centuries with early Christianity, that's what's happening now as well. That we don't know at the present time if a person comes as a Reformer conservative Jew, certainly he comes to Israel, for example, he'd have to have his lineage looked at in which to see whether his mom is Jewish according to Jewish law. But it is likely to come to a certain point where the Orthodox world would end up flipping it, which says anybody who says I'm Reform or conservative, we don't know if they're Jewish because we have such high percentages of those people are not Jewish. And that's how it goes from the theoretical point of what is Judaism goes to the point of redefining, as in the case of early Christianity, redefining the question of what makes somebody Jewish.
Rabbi, parallel to what you're talking about, which is the watering down of the heritage from an ancestry and genetic standpoint, is a watering down of the traditions and the actual exit of whatever form of Judaism that so many people are talking about, such that the conservative and Reform movement are getting smaller and seemingly dying off.
I think that's what's happening. In other words, the reason it may not be that much of an issue is because they are disappearing anyway. In other words, generally speaking, the Reform movement as a movement has been around 200 years, from the early 1800s to the early 2000s. So it's been 200 years, but it's rare to find a family that has been Reform Jews for 200 years. There are books called, Jews for Nothing. There's another, Our Crowd by Stephen Birmingham, which was written from a secular perspective. It talked about the fact that the Jews, the Reformed Jews of the early 1800s, by the time you get to the early 1900s, big, big chunks of them were no longer identifying as Jewish. We can know now, for the very famous examples are the big family, the Reformed families who started the New York Times in the 1800s, and they still have names like Sulzberger and Ochs, etc. None of them are Jewish. None of them identify as Jewish. They aren't halachically Jewish. See, because in the family, they may intermarry, and a generation or two may say, well, we're Jewish. But two, three generations later, the average member of the family says, I'm not interested in preserving it. I'm not Jewish. I know, familiar, the most recent famous example is Kamala, what's her name, the vice president?
Harris.
Kamala Harris, right? No, but her husband's name is Doug Emhoff.
Right.
So, and he's Jewish. Kamala is not. But while he's Jewish, his wife, his previous wife that he had his children with, was not Jewish also. And when his daughters were asked, about their Jewish heritage, we're not Jewish. In other words, so Doug Emhoff wanted his daughters to identify as Jews. They said, listen, nothing personal. I'm not Jewish. So even if one generation or two may be non-Jews who say I'm Jewish, but it doesn't take all that long before, again, the various families with the New York Times, et cetera, before the kids say, I'm not Jewish.
So Rebbe, what about open Orthodoxy in the scope of the Jewish fabric?
You can never tell where things head. You know, I don't know. To me,
it's always a discussion we have at the Shabbos table as like, okay, technically they embody those four basic principles to ensure that they're actually Jewish, but it's a they constantly try to tinker and, you know, fit the outside world inside of Judaism, and I feel like eventually things will start to crack. It's my own theory, but
I think not only would I agree, I would think it's already a very distinct problem in the world that's called modern Orthodox, which is more to the right than of the open Orthodox. In general, it's innocent until proven guilty. So while I think they're making a serious mistake, but unless they make very distinct statements of differences, they're Jewish. In general, my theory of Jewish history is that the Jewish people are eternal. It's one of the essential points in Torah, and the Jewish people can't disappear. But we should understand that eternal doesn't mean that everybody stays Jewish. If the Israelites in the first temple period numbered a few million people, by now they should number a few hundred million people if they maintain their identity, or they should have disappeared totally. To me, the best model for Jewish continuity is the Navy SEAL. Just as a model. The Navy SEAL, and we believe that we're the spiritual Navy SEALs of humanity, and that the basic, I read that of every 1,000 guys that sign onto to try to apply to the Navy SEALs, 30 guys make it. That sounds like Jewish history. In other words, throughout history, this constant dropping out, it's almost like 3,000 years of God testing the Jewish people, in which people saying, it's too tough, it's not for me. And I don't want to judge anyone in particular, but that the reality is, you know, I always say, why can you not change the Torah? On a simple level, because God doesn't change. So if Torah is the do's and don'ts, Daniel?
Mm-hmm.
Are you an animal or a human being? I hope your dad will forgive me for that. You're both animal and you, but which are you more? More animal or more human being?
Like 95% animal, I'd say.
Right. In other words,
he's learning. I'm not learning, I already know.
Right. No, the Bible says that the difference between human beings and animal is zero. In other words, other than our decisions to be human, we are just tame animals. We're not. We're probably the dangerous of all animals, we human beings. But picture the idea that Phil, right?
Yeah.
So picture that, essentially, picture it scientifically, that from the Big Bang till 6,000 years ago of Adam and Eve, God created all the things. Did it take 15 billion years, 6 days? I wasn't there. Either one is fine to me. Because if I wasn't, it doesn't count. What counts is that at a certain point around 6,000 years ago, God took a healthy primate, a human capacity, and said, you are the animal that can choose to be more, but it's going to be hard work. And Torah is the do's and don'ts of how to create the you that can make a relationship with God. So since God doesn't change, how to connect him doesn't change. Some things are easier. Okay, 3,000 years ago, so many people worshipped idols. So a lot of Jews worshipped idols because it was the thing to do. And it's a violation of Torah. Now it's a lot easier because if most of the goyim don't do it, you know what I mean? But God gave us a Torah that told us how to create the meat to rise above the animal self in a way that I can make a relationship with God. So if God doesn't change, what to do to connect to him doesn't change. To then change the Torah, it's like, picture this. A guy says, this is ridiculous. For every 1,000 guys signing up for the Navy SEALs, 30 make it. That's terrible. 33%. I got a great idea. Let's come up with something called the Reform Navy SEAL. In other words, and we're going to change the rules and we're going to make it much easier. So instead of from 1,000 guys, 30 make it, we're going to change it so that for every 1,000 guys, 300 make it. Isn't that great? And the answer is no, because at that point, you won't have any Navy SEALs at all. Yeah. You can't change. If the Navy SEALs have a certain mission to be as tough as they can, you can do it with the rules and get 30. But you change the rules, you don't have Navy SEALs at all. And so what happens is a reform movement or conservative movement, and I understand they meant well, let's try to make it easier for our kids to be Jewish. But they find that instead of making it easier to be Jewish, they made it impossible to be Jewish. And 3-4 generations later, the kids are out of it. It's simply not meaningful enough for them to stay there. But like the Navy SEALs, we said, Torah is God saying, this is how you take a handsome, healthy animal like Daniel next to you. And if he really wants to make the Navy SEALs of humanity, of spirituality, he commits himself. And by the way, Torah does say nobody's perfect, but to commit yourself to the totality of Torah and to know that if you're doing something wrong, you admit it's something wrong. Nobody's perfect. But you can't say, well, now don't have to do that either. I always say, Phil, do you know like the numbers? How many commandments are there in the Torah? Anybody know?
613.
Very good. 613. But because I always like irritating people, I have my own set. I say there are 612 commandments. There are 612 do's and don'ts that God gives us in the Torah of how to connect to God. Obviously, because we don't have the land of Israel and we don't have the temple, some of them don't apply. And so we can only do it if we have all the stuff. But there are 612 do's and don'ts. Well, we're in the ideal, we can connect to God. Which mitzvah do I separate out? There are 612 do's and don'ts of how to connect to God. Daniel, what's the one I set aside?
Anochi?
Nope. Anochi is, I'm the Lord your God, to know and believe that there's one God. No, that's important. There are 612 do's and don'ts. And then there's a beautiful mitzvah called Teshuvah, which anytime you screw up any of the 612, God says, if you really mean it, we can make it okay. You have to accept the fact that you did something wrong, and God said, in return for that, there is no sin that you can't do tshuva for. So there are 612 do's and don'ts of how to connect to God and the beautiful mitzvah of tshuva, which says, anytime you screw up any of the 612, if you really want to fix it up, I'll accept it. We'll fix it up together.
Got a delicate question for you.
Sure.
There are elements within Chabad who have certain notions of the Rebbe.
Yeah.
How can we go forward and reconcile with this one?
So I hear what you're saying. I think it's a big problem too. The question is, and then I'll tell you why it worries me, just beyond theoretically, Phil. As long as early Christianity stayed with the theoretical belief that Jesus is the Messiah, not God, but the Redeemer, and he'll come back in the second time, but they keep all the commandments, they'd still be Jewish. But if they change the commandments, it'll become a breakaway like early Christianity. And the scary thing to me is there is no one there. See, people say there is one Lubavitcher Rebbe. There aren't. There are 5,000 Lubavitcher Rebbes, because you go to some of the Lubavitchers and ask, is the Rebbe Mashiach? How many different groups do you have about the Rebbe being Mashiach? Do you have any idea, Daniel?
How many groups are there?
Yeah, what's the division within Chabad about whether the Rebbe's Mashiach?
I mean, wouldn't that just be two schools of thought?
That's the common mistake. Yeah. That's the common mistake. Daniel?
Maybe. Okay, I'll try one more time. There's three groups. There's four against and tolerate.
No. It's kind of, it used to be, everybody thinks that there are those who believe the Rebbe is Mashiach and those believe he's not. It's not true. There are three groups. There are those who believe the Rebbe is Mashiach. There are those who believe the Rebbe is not Mashiach. And actually, what I think is the biggest group is the third group. And that is, they believe the Rebbe is Mashiach, but they don't talk about it. Now, you're going to ask me, well, how do you know who the guy you're talking to? So please don't publish this. But I will say the following. Whenever you talk to a Lubavitcher and ask, you can ask him, do you believe that the Rebbe is Mashiach? If he says yes, he's one of the yes guys. If he says no, you can trust people on their important beliefs, I think. If he says no, he's one of the no guys. If when you ask, is the Lubavitcher Rebbe Mashiach, he gives you an answer that when he finishes, you have no idea what he said, he is he's group number three. Phil? I feel I'm a very Orthodox Jew, but I believe you can. I'm not a modern Orthodox Jew, but I believe you can learn from modernity. You learn from history and from patterns how things work. So when you have a guy who they thought he was Mashiach, and everybody thought, well, once he dies, they'll know. And again, you can understand the psychology of it. The guy just couldn't admit they were wrong. Now, once you have 10,000 people who don't admit they're wrong, God knows where it'll take it. So we don't know where it'll head. And I just pray, the sooner Mashiach comes, the more likely it'll solve the problem. But Phil, I feel that there are other things developing, and that what Chabad may be waiting for is the Saint Paul that comes after the Jesus. We don't know.
So it's concerning, though.
I think so, yeah. Okay. Because when you have a group of tens of thousands of Jews, you have 5,000 Chabad houses or 3,000, whatever it is. So you have guys, and there is no Lubavitcher Rebbe. So whoever you ask becomes the local Lubavitcher Rebbe.
Yeah.
Some say yes, some say no, some go hem and haw about it. So that's a dangerous, like a easily ignitable situation. As if we don't have enough problems, Phil.